So here's to all of the good thinkers, and here's to the lonely drinker. But don't you know, let this moment pass.
Hello, folks. My name is Jason Spies, and I'm an award-winning multimedia journalist and then the host of the Crude Life Media Network and podcast. Thank you, folks, for tuning in to The Crude Life, a place for expert interviews, full-length features, and specialty programs. And it is all thanks to our fine sponsors. Folks, The Crude Life sponsors are quality companies who have ethics at the core and have proven to be positive leaders in their community. Please support our fantastic sponsors. In addition to this podcast, I invite you to check out other Crude Life productions, like our weekly newspaper column and magazine features. Visit thecrudelife.com for a full list of our media partners and content offerings. Never miss an episode or article. Subscribe on iTunes or have our free weekly newsletter delivered to your email box. And of course, be loyal to our sponsors. They keep the program free and literally keep our lights on.
Since 1979, MBI Energy Services has committed to responsibly growing with today's oil and gas industry by providing proven experience, strategic locations, and integrated services. MBI Energy Services is well established, and its innovation in safety and excellent customer service is what truly makes MBI Energy Services the oil field service professionals. MBI Energy Services, the cutting edge in oil field safety solutions. Learn more at MBIEnergyServices.com.
My name is Otis, and I am the host of the Kids in Capitalism KidCast. Let me tell you about one of our sponsors. Hatch Realty is in the business of helping people. They just happen to sell real estate. Call Eric Hatch or anyone on the Hatch Realty team with any real estate question. They want to be a resource and connection for you. That's Hatch Realty, 701-212-1572. That's 701-212-1572. Hatch Realty in the business of helping people. They just happen to sell real estate. Hatch Realty, tell them Otis sent you.
So here's to riding shotgun with the Lone Ranger. Here's to making a few friends out of a few strangers. But don't you know, let this moment pass.
Welcome back to the Crude Life Media Network. My name is Jason Spies. I'm an award-winning multimedia journalist, and I'll be your host today for this special interview and podcast. Today we talk with Robert Michael, president and founder of R.C. Michael Company Geological Consultants.
Not letting this moment pass you by.
My name is Robert Michael. I'm a self-employed consulting geologist in oil and gas, and I'm also work into kind of being a half-and-half geologist landman. I work exclusively in Wyoming and Colorado. That's where my expertise is. I'm native Californian, bachelor's in geology at Pomona College in California, graduate work at Laramie, and being a geologist in commodities, I've kind of bounced around doing everything. I started out in oil and gas with Texaco in Denver, and then I bounced into mining, and mining died, and then I worked in uranium exploration, and we know what happened to uranium exploration in this country. That gave up the ghost, and I've worked in environmental geology, mostly checking out and analyzing dirty old gas station sites. I've worked for the Bureau of Land Management, and for the past 20 or so years I've been self-employed in the business of analyzing the parcels offered in state and federal lease, oil and gas lease sales in Colorado and Wyoming, and then attending the sales and doing proxy bidding for clients. And that sums me up. That's what I'm doing now.
So let me start with just kind of, we talked a little bit before this interview about how fracking has changed the industry.
Yes.
Your perspective now, if you're in Colorado and in Wyoming, are you guys having fracking here? I mean, North Dakota's been known as the fracking capital of the world, to where we've got Chinese companies, French companies, I want to even say a couple African companies that are fracking in the Bakken, experimenting, trying to figure out how to bring that technology back to their home country. What are you hearing about fracking? Are you involved in much fracking in Colorado or in Wyoming?
Well, I should say that my expertise is at the, I'd say at the top end of the process. As I said, what I do is acquire, evaluate, and acquire leases. Once the lease is acquired by the client, I drop out of the picture.
Sure, okay? But just anecdotally, just from what you've seen, I mean, you've been in this industry so long,
yes,
that I make the argument that the fracking technology with hydraulic frack, with horizontal drilling, has changed the oil and gas industry to where they're rewriting their business plans. That's what I mean, to where, so have you experienced any of this with your clients?
Absolutely.
Okay.
As I was discussing with Mr. Spies earlier, in a way, we're the victims of our own success. The fracking revolution in Colorado, and I'm sure North Dakota too, obviously, with the Bakken, although Colorado is where I have the expertise. For one thing, it has opened up a completely new play that essentially didn't exist before. The celebrated Niobrara Formation, which is a shaley limestone, and it's widespread over the Rockies, but the bullseye of the Niobrara is the Denver Basin. That's northeast Colorado, and the center of that is Weld County, Greeley. The Niobrara, if you look at it in a fresh outcrop, it looks about as promising as gray concrete. That's what it looks like. It's a limey shale or a dirty gray limestone. One of the terms is marl. That's kind of a catch-all term for a clayey, limestoney rock that, as I say, looks like concrete, and generally it's about that productive. There are places in Colorado and Wyoming where the Niobrara had been naturally fractured by some geologic process that I don't pretend to understand. And there has always been historical Niobrara production in a few areas. For example, the Silo Field in Laramie County, Wyoming, east of Cheyenne. But generally, as I say, the Niobrara is something you drill through to get to the good stuff underneath. Historically in the Denver Basin, it would be the sandstones, early Cretaceous sandstones, the D-sand, J-sand, maybe the Codel. Well, now, with this new technology, we can blast apart that Niobrara. The gray and black color, it's loaded with hydrocarbon, but that hydrocarbon is locked in there, and you couldn't really economically get to it. Now we can. And especially with this amazing turnaround in horizontal technology, it still blows my mind to think you can drill a vertical hole, turn 90 or so degrees, and bore a shaft over a mile horizontally. The technology of that is incredible. So now you can have a mile exposure to your Niobrara, you can frack it, and you can get a very productive well. Well, this is great, and we were for a long time celebrating, hey, we're energy independent. This is the greatest thing that's ever happened to the business, and we've almost shot ourselves in the foot. Now we have so much oil that the price has plummeted. Of course, worldwide economy has something to do with it. The fact is we're producing ourselves into a glut. So it's interesting to see the great changes in the industry since, 2009 was the first big Niobrara hit in northeast Colorado.
And we've covered the Niobrara a little bit because that was kind of a rumored next big play. And where is the Niobrara at today? Are people drilling in the Niobrara, or are they waiting for, do you know a break-even point in the Niobrara? The Bakken is anywhere from $30 to $50, depending on where you're at. Some parts are $60, $70. But like Tuscaloosa down in Louisiana, or I'm sorry, Alabama, that's a $90 play because it's very clay-like, and they frack, and the clay absorbs it back up again. And so, yeah, I learned that from Dr. Lauren Scott.
I didn't know that.
And So do you know if there's a price play here in Colorado, or are they drilling every day?
I think the break-even in the Niobrara is roughly comparable to the back Bakken.
Okay.
And people are still at least locating wells, well sites in the Niobrara, and obviously they're not drilling it like they were a couple years ago, but they're still punching horizontal wells into it. I think what I'm seeing is a lot of stake locations that don't have rigs moving into them, but they're keeping the permit alive. And I'm also seeing a lot of beginning to see more wells being drilled but not immediately completed. That I think obviously fracking a mile of horizontal well is not cheap, and operators are looking for higher prices. That rainbow around the bend that I think people in this business have always been looking for.
So, but,
Also, I'm seeing more wells maybe going into the Codell, which is a dirty sandstone just below the Niobrara, which is apparently easier to complete. But Niobrara is still very alive as a play. South Central Powder River Basin, it's pretty active, along with some sandstones, typical sandstone play, although again the horizontal technology and the fracking is extending into the old classic sandstone plays in the Powder River.
Mm-hmm. Are you seeing, where are we at with the leases? One of the things in North Dakota was the oil companies during the $100 oil, it was a lease bonanza.
Right.
And
right.
Former Governor Ed Schaefer, he also sat on the board of directors for Continental Resources, he kind of put a warning out there that, listen guys, they're just securing the leases and you got to prove there's oil down there. Well, they already knew there was oil down there because of the core samples that we have in our library. North Dakota has saved every core sample since the 50s. So that's how everybody knew that the oil was already there. Now, what he said is that after the leases are secured, they got 25 years. And the best place to store that oil is in the ground. So they wait, it's all a price play now. Now it's a corn, soy, it's a commodity play. That's how I look at it. I talked to Kringen Oil Properties. He's a Williston, North Dakota native. He's got an office down in Mesa, Arizona. He's a leaser too. He did it back in the 80s when everyone was selling them. He was buying them. Where are you seeing your Colorado and your Wyoming leases? Are people still selling them? Are they all gone? Are they renewing them? I guess just a state of the union for your business.
Yes, what I notice at the lease sales is that the average price for government, state, and federal leases, on an average, they're not selling for near what they were a couple, 3 years ago. Now, the exception to that is a red-hot lease. There's an 80-acre parcel that's an offset to a new discovery. That still goes for several thousand an acre, but there's a real what I'm finding is the leases fall into two categories. The red hot ones still sell for big bucks, and then the decent wildcat leases that a few years ago would sell for a fairly good price, a few hundred bucks, are now not selling for near as much, like, you know, 80-90. So again, they kind of skew into two populations. And I'm trying to think if I'm seeing leases bought and sat on. To some extent, now a state lease in Wyoming and Colorado has exactly 5 years of initial tenure before you have to either be drilling on it or producing on it. So it's not like a company can buy a lease and sit on it for a decade.
And if I may interject, right. I believe North Dakota is you have 1 year to prove there's oil. And then you can sit on it for 25.
I believe.
And okay. I'd have to double check, but I think that is the case.
Interesting.
That's why there was a big bonanza. And everybody's punching the holes everywhere just to say, okay, yep, there's oil. And once they do it, they cap it. And then they just wait. Because these new rigs, I don't know if you know this, these 150-foot tall derricks, they walk, right? They walk.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
They have legs and they walk.
Yes.
And it reduces the footprint incredibly. But it takes two crews of four on shift to tear it down, move it 17 miles. In 4 days, they can do that. Four guys can move that rig 17 miles and set it back up in 4 days. That is incredible to me.
That is incredible.
That is unbelievable.
I did not know that.
And I did a story on it a few years ago, neighbors drilling. And my jaw was dropped. I could have fracked for my jaw. I mean, it was just unbelievable. So that's kind of the story there. And that's what I mean when the Bakken really has become the template for the rest of the world.
Yes.
Because, well, we got walking rigs there. We got remote frackers now. We got people that are fracking from San Antonio in the Bakken. And they're hitting that pie plate 2 miles below the Earth's surface, thousands of miles away. But when you think about it, we've got, in North Dakota, we have the Happy Hooligans. They do a lot of drone missions overseas. So we got guys in Fargo flying over in Europe. They're flying planes in Europe, and who's driving that plane? No one. So anyway, just to get back to your leasing, you've got a 5-year window to when they got to prove there's oil or determine what they're going to do with it.
Yes. Now, obviously, if you're moving a rig onto your lease and it's the day of your 5-year expiration, they're not going to shoot themselves in the foot by saying, "No, we're canceling your lease," and preclude themselves from possible royalties. I should say a federal lease, this is nationwide, has a 10-year time fuse on it. Although in a kind of a little effort to nudge companies into doing something with their lease, not sitting on it, a few years back, after 5 years, the yearly rental on a federal lease doubled per acre.
When was that?
That was a few years back. Okay. I can't remember. For example, if you had a 80-acre lease, federal lease, the rent would have been $1.50, and it went up to, I'm trying to think of it, went up to $2.50 or $3, but it was, I don't have the exact figure in my mind, it went up substantially,
We do the 5,000 foot view topics here. In fact, we are 5,000 feet up in the air. How high are we right now?
Almost exactly 5,000.
Okay.
Yeah.
And actually, that sentence I should probably clarify. How high are we in the air right now? Since we are in Colorado, I got the word high is somewhat universal now because of the cannabis culture. People might think differently. Is Wyoming showing any life on the western side? I heard rumors that there was a play over on the western side. Might have been more natural gas than oil, but have you heard anything on the western side of Wyoming?
Southwestern Wyoming, the northwest is out. It's national parks and volcanics.
Right.
Nobody's going to drill a hole at Jackson Hole. It's, so it's southwest, the Red Desert, the Green River Basin. That tends to be a more gas-prone area. And the Pinedale area, that was drilled enormously and yielded some huge gas fields like the Jonah field that made a lot of millionaires. Gas is still a very viable commodity. As a matter of fact, the last lease I sold in my business was to BP that have a play north of I-80 between Green River and between Rock Springs and Rawlins. So it's not as lively as it was, but it's still a very viable area.
Well, I'll give you what's going on in natural gas. I've been following natural gas since probably 2012 because there's a lot of flaring in North Dakota.
Yes.
And the mineral rights people lost this battle in court where their claim was, we should get paid for those. I don't care if you sell them or you flare them. Mm-hmm. Those were our minerals. Do you ever get into that with the flaring side? You probably don't flare much out here and everything, but you see what I mean, to where nobody's getting paid for that.
That's right. And, of course, flaring is bad PR for the business. Average layperson goes by a site and they see this flare burning and they say, well, these damned oil companies, they're burning this stuff, they're wasting it. And so, you know, average citizen doesn't understand the economics and why that gas is flared, but it really looks bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's obviously to our advantage to capture that stuff whenever possible, and of course it's worth something.
You know, the thing about natural gas is too, there's such an abundance of it because of the fracking right now. We have a wet gas up in the Bakken, so I think we do 7 to 9 different molecules as opposed to Texas, which has 3.
Huh.
And I learned that from John Gibson, the CEO of One Elk, former CEO. And there's plastic plants going into North Dakota. There's Badlands NGL out of Denver. They're putting a plastics plant in North Dakota.
Uh-huh.
And there is a giant infrastructure renaissance happening for natural gas in countries like Qatar and a few other places to reduce that price of transporting the molecule. Because listen, you know as well as I do, transporting a molecule to Southeast Asia is not cheap. But it's getting there. And when you got $3 natural gas, you're not making any money off anything.
Uh-huh.
The residential market is booming because, you know, we got cheap natural gas. So what I see is going to happen is that natural gas is probably going to go up in price over the next few years to, I guess, offset some of the infrastructure that's being built, which should open up whole new opportunity markets.
That's right.
So are you hearing anything in the natural gas world in terms of what I was just talking about or any other direction?
Well, again, my focus is on Colorado and Wyoming. It's not global. I think it's great that LNG infrastructure is being built, and that's going to be one of the ways of the future. After all, it's clean. China could sure use it to clean up the filth they breathe. So I see a nice prospect for natural gas, because we're not going to go to wind and solar to power our society in our lifetimes, maybe in the year 3000, yes. And you talk about bridge fuel, natural gas is it.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, and the other thing about natural gas is a lot of transportation is converting their engines.
Yes, right. Exactly.
I interviewed Jerry Moyes from CEO Swift Transportation 2 years ago in Jackson Hole, actually.
Uh-huh.
And he said that he told the Wall Street Journal he thought he'd have 10% of his fleet converted to natural gas by the end of the year. He said they didn't even make 1% because they're working with Cummins to try to get an engine built. They couldn't get over the Rocky Mountains. There wasn't enough power to do the, you see what I mean?
No kidding.
They couldn't get enough horsepower to get over those high altitudes. So back to the drawing board, and what he did say is that after they figure it out, it'll become very economical after that. It's trying to figure out a way to get that natural gas to be powerful enough to move, you know, things. And so, and I haven't seen that they've gotten that far yet. He must have ran into a couple more snags. Anyway, so there you're learning all kinds of different stuff today.
For sure.
BLM, you worked for the BLM.
Yes, yes.
That's changed a little bit.
That's changed some. I think people in the industry, sometimes there's a pretty lousy selection of leases in a sale, and people in the industry will say, well, it was politics, the current administration, they're trying to hamstring the BLM on what they offer, but then they'll turn around and have a really nice lease sale. There was a big lease sale in the Weld County, Niobrara Prey, this year, and it was a great sale, brought in a lot of money. So I think that's kind of hard to prove that they're under political pressure. One always suspects that, but their leasing program is still very viable.
Did you work much with the Natives, Native Americans?
No, I tell you, that is a different different rules.
But it all does fall yes. under the BLM.
No.
At the end of the day, it doesn't?
As far as, for example, the big reservation that I would work with that has a lot of oil and gas would be the Wind River Indian Reservation in Wyoming. And I believe they set their own rules as far as leasing their oil and gas. I do not think the BLM has anything to do with it. Again, I've never touched a lease okay. on the reservation because they have, as they say, it's a different little universe. It's their business, and I just stay out of it.
Yeah. Actually, that it was a problem in North Dakota.
Uh-huh.
Because the BLM is above the American Indian Agency. And so...
Bureau of Indian Affairs?
Affairs, not agency. Yeah. And Hovind had to put through, Senator Hovind and a bunch of others had to put through a BLM Streamline Act because we've got a 100% Native American-owned oil company in North Dakota now.
Oh.
They, Missouri River Resources. They want all their geologists, all their engineers. So they're trying to create a 100% Native-owned because they got a lot of oil under Newtown, North Dakota, which
sure.
is a Native.
Wyoming, too.
Yeah, and... they were having problems because it would take a year to process a lease through the BLM, whereas you and I, as a private person, could do it in 90 days.
Huh.
And you know as well as I do, during commodity prices, you got to move fast sometimes.
That's right.
And so that was an issue. Anyway, that was long before your time and, after your time. I just uh-huh. know you had some time there at the BLM. So,
uh-huh.
Okay, so... Let's see, what else? Geologist, leasing. Where do you see Colorado and Wyoming going over the next 10 years?
Oh, geez. I tell you what, I think only a fool would make a definite prediction. Number one...
But predictions are fun.
Predictions are fun, but they're not worth the paper they're written on. For example, in 2005... remember, we're running out of oil, Hubbard's Peak, you know, and then along comes fracking, horizontal. Well, those predictions look about as outdated as a great comet will come and smash the Earth in the year 2000. So, also, a lot of us were frankly caught with our pants down by the drop in oil prices. In retrospect, we can see how it came. The technology making a lot of oil that wasn't there before, but nonetheless, a lot of us were caught by surprise. So, that said, you can take my prediction for what it's worth, which is nothing, but I'm looking out the window now and I see a lot of cars going by, and I don't see a whole lot of Teslas. So, again, after we have all passed from this earth, well, maybe I'll have solar-powered, self-driving electric cars, but we're going to have to fuel what we've got for quite a while now. And so there's always going to be a good market for oil and gas, and especially gas, liquefied natural gas. If oil is at some time decided it's too polluting to drive cars. Also... I don't see a whole lot of solar-powered Burlington Northern freight trains going through town, and I don't see a whole lot of solar-powered jetliners. Yes, there's a solar plane that takes about, a year to go around the Earth and can barely support itself and a pilot. So, you know, we're going to need that old jet fuel making contrails. So it's going to go up, it's going to go down. Who knows what the Middle East is going to do, although, thank God, we're not as dependent on that nasty part of the world as we once were. Always going to be a good market for it.
Let me ask you this. I'll make the question a little more direct. Have you heard from any of your clients or any of your activity that you have in oil and gas that... energy companies are definitely putting more of a conservative effort to be more diverse.
Yes.
all of the above type portfolio.
Absolutely.
And these are traditionally oil companies that are doing this, right?
Yeah. And this is great. I mean, they, I think they obviously have seen these, and we wish we could iron them out, these roller coaster dips in the price of oil. They know it's that's probably going to go on indefinitely. Prices will go up, and maybe 15 years from now they'll fall again. And so they're in the energy business, and
you said it right there. Yeah, they are in the energy business, not the oil and gas business, not the electric business. Uh-huh. Not they're in the energy business. Yeah. Correct.
If you watch TV, you see an ad from Exxon or Shell, and they're not. It's no longer pictures of pump jacks pumping away. They're got their new solar lab with people in white coats working on solar cells, right? And so that's how they're kind of reconfiguring themselves.
Is your industry changing at all with that? Are you seeing solar leases or wind leases or anything like that?
Actually, I think, again, I have kind of tunnel vision on oil and gas. I think the BLM, especially in California, is getting into solar and wind leasing. I could be wrong, but something tells me they are.
Well, we have a lot of wind in North Dakota. Uh-huh. We have a lot. In fact, I just talked to the Public Service Commissioner, and she said, she goes, her quote was, "The skyline in western North Dakota will never be the same."
Oh, that's right.
Because of all the red dots. So at night, you know, you got all the red dots on the wind turbine. South Dakota's like that too. And it's just blinking red dots. Some people like it, some people don't, you know. And but there's a lot of wind leases, I guess. Uh-huh. I was curious about your specific industry of the tunnel vision of oil and gas, if you're starting to expand at all.
No, because I have to have that tunnel vision to do my job. And you're right, in Northeast Colorado, too, you see a lot of wind farms. And, you know, comes down to there's no free lunch. Yes, wind doesn't put out CO2. However, those turbines, those windings in those huge nacelles on those big turbines, they consume an enormous amount of copper. Well, the copper comes from digging holes in Mother Earth. And let's face it, they industrialize a landscape, okay?
Yeah,
and they kill birds. So
the other thing that people forget about, like wind, for example, they bring up wind to replace coal often.
Yeah.
Well, when you take away 1 megawatt of coal, you can't replace it with 1 megawatt of wind. No. It takes like 5 megawatts of wind, or 10 at some cases. And people don't understand that. That it's just not replacing an apple with an apple. These are apples and oranges. These different energies, you know. And so, okay. Well, I guess anything that you want people to know about yourself or your industry or anything as we kind of wind down?
Well, I have also a comment on solar. Yes, solar doesn't put out CO2 or particulates. As I mentioned, I'm from Southern California, and I happen to love the California desert in the winter, and I kind of in that loop of desert fans. There are big solar projects, I mean, enormous solar farms planned for the California desert. Well, guess what? The Sierra Club is now up in arms about industrializing relatively pristine expanses of desert wilderness with enormous solar farms. So, you know, again, there's no free lunch.
Yeah. Well, how can give your information out for people and, you know, kind of let people know if they need a lease man, huh?
Yeah, please do.
So it's Robert Michael. And how can people contact you?
It's the R.C. Michael Company, Inc., 1212 Rain Tree Drive, Suite A5, Fort Collins, Colorado, 80526. Phone is 970-484-2737. Email robertmchl, one word, at AOL.com. And it's been a fascinating morning. I have learned so much about North Dakota I didn't know before, and it's been a real pleasure.
Well, one more time, pen and paper for those folks out there. If you've got some leases in, Wyoming or Colorado and you want to give Mr. Robert Michael a call, that's 970-484-2737, 970-484-2737. Of course, you can always email him at robertmchl@aol.com. That's robertmchl@aol.com. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure.
And that concludes this special podcast. I thank you folks for joining us today. My name is Jason Spies. Be happy, be safe, and we'll see you next time.
And here's to the sound of one hand clapping, and here's to not letting this moment pass. And here's to carrying the weight of the world, and here's to screaming, yeah, never being heard, and here's to not letting this moment pass.
Since 1979, MBI Energy Services has committed to responsibly growing with today's oil and gas industry by providing proven experience, strategic locations, and integrated services. MBI Energy Services is well established, and its innovation in safety and excellent customer service is what truly makes MBI Energy Services the oil field service professionals. MBI Energy Services, the cutting edge in oil field safety solutions. Learn more at MBIEnergyServices.com.
My name is Otis, and I am the host of the Kids in Capitalism KidCast. Let me tell you about one of our sponsors. Hatch Realty is in the business of helping people. They just happen to sell real estate. Call Eric Hatch or anyone on the Hatch Realty team with any real estate question. They want to be a resource and connection for you. That's Hatch Realty, 701-212-1572. That's 701-212-1572. Hatch Realty in the business of helping people. They just happen to sell real estate. Hatch Realty, tell them Otis sent you.